You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. So in this episode, I'm going to introduce you to Bea Rausch, and we're going to talk about how she made a very personal decision when it came to work, her life, and her parents. So this is kind of a crazy thing that we go through, right? It's the transition from being a kid where our parents and the adults in our lives take care of us to being an adult who takes care of ourselves. And then maybe for some of us, we take care of kids, stepkids, that kind of thing. And then for some of us, we're going to go on to enter a phase where as adults, we will be in a position to take care of our parents or other adult relatives. And it's a part of life, you guys, that's honestly a lot cuter in storybooks for kids than it sometimes works out in real life. So if you're ready, I'm ready. Let's get to it. Bea Rausch, welcome to Imperfect Adulting.
Hello, so glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
I'm so happy that you're here. Are you welcome? Are you ready for a fun chat?
Yes, I'm so ready.
All right, that is very good. I begin every single interview, pretty much, by asking people where in the world they are, what part of the world they're in. So where are you talking to me today?
So I'm from Indiana right now.
Fabulous. What part of Indiana?
So near Purdue University.
Ah, very good. Very, very nice. So I went to the University of Kansas. I'm a Jayhawk. And I have a kid who's a Wolverine, and I also have a stepkid who's a Gator.
Uh-oh.
So we have a house divided during basketball season.
Yes, I was going to say, yep.
Not usually during football season. I don't have strong football allegiances. During basketball season, it's a fun play, and so very good. So, but Purdue always reminds me of basketball season, because there are many times that my beloved.
Oh yeah, they're raving again. It's always something exciting in the pregame and the postgame and all the things that are happening. There's lots of discussions about that right now, for sure. Yeah,
absolutely. I love it. All right. So usually my second warm-up question, my softball question, is about family, but we're going to talk about family as the topic of what we're going to talk about today. So I picked a different warm-up question for you. And so this is just to get to know each other a little better, create a little bit of rapport between you and the audience. When you think back to younger you, like middle school age B, or junior high, they sometimes call it. Do you remember what were your favorite classes, and if you had any dreams about what you wanted to be when you grew up?
Gosh, yeah. So I was like studying biology then, and I really wanted to go into pre-med. And I did start in that pre-med, and I did a double major with pre-med and psychology. And then things changed because of a variety of life circumstances, but I really love science, and still to this day, I'm in psychology, obviously, and I do a ton of research, and I'm always interested in that field still, learning about biology and the interaction with that and cognition and how it affects longevity. That's like my big thing now, because when I'm thinking about my parents and what happened to them, which we'll get into, I always think if they had done a few things differently, would the outcome have been different? Obviously we didn't have that knowledge that we have now. So yeah.
Really interesting. And that is like an area of, and I am not an academic, right? I am not an academic. I graduated from college and was ready to be finished. And, but I think that's a really interesting thing to be, studying right now, because like sort of science and psychology are sort of coming together. So like neuroscience and psychology are really merging with all the tests and things like that they can do. And that's very cool. Very, very cool. Okay. So the nuts and bolts of the choice and decisions and things that we're going to talk about today is that at some point in your recent past, you actually took a what you call a downgrade. I put it in quotations because I borrowed that from your application, a downgrade in your corporate job to get a stronger work-life balance, which has been a life changer for you. Does that sound like a good conversation today?
Yeah. So I definitely switched to part-time and, to do other projects, like do the podcast that we have, the Social Leopards podcast. And just also because I was anticipating that I was going to have to caregive for my parents. So yes. That is
Very
right.
good. So let's back up. I'm going to do my best to walk you through this story so that it's interesting and captivating for the people listening. It's my understanding that you haven't done a lot of public talking quite yet about this, so we'll see how it goes. I'm not like an expose heavy hitter interviewer, so this
Fine.
will be fun. How long ago did you like really pull the trigger on this change? And you mentioned the motivation was caregiving. So, but when did you actually make the change here?
So I started working part-time about 2 years ago. Yes, 2 years
2 years
ago.
ago.
And the
All
year
right.
before that, my, co-host Beth and I have been talking a lot about our, lives and how we had, they kind of interface a little bit. She works with adults in healthcare, and I was doing like, children and adults in a slightly different capacity. But the idea of like loneliness and people being alone and struggling was something we were just really noticing. And of course, pandemic,
Yeah.
we had a lot of problems with people just trying to, commit suicide and having a lot of mental health concerns and nowhere to really reach out to, right? Because we have such a shortage everywhere, and especially here. So yes. So yeah.
Yeah. No, so and that's a hot topic right now for everybody. Well, I don't know if it's a hot topic for me. I think that it really I think we interrupted a lot of social channels. We interrupted a lot of clubs. Many of the organizations that I was involved in pre-lockdown have never fully recovered. And so that cut off channels for my social connections. And many online entrepreneurs are introverts. I am not. I am an extrovert. If I talk to people on Zoom all day long, by the time it gets to like 5:30, if I go out for a walk or something, I will be talking to the plants. I'll be talking to the dogs. I mean, I crave face-to-face interaction. And so I think that's super important for at least for me. And so I think that's really, really valuable. I think we learned as a society, how wonderful this type of connection is. And so many things really got better. Like, so I have a college age kid. All of her courses are recorded. So if she bails to take a trip and, or she gets the flu, she can watch the class, which is so much better than
Yeah.
in the old days where you had to like hit up your friends and say, hey, did you pay attention? You know?
Exactly. Yes. Which one of us got the right notes? Yes, for
Right. So
sure.
that's a
Yes.
major improvement, right? That's a major improvement. But on the other side, I think we tested it and we were like, oh, you know what? These human people, they need other people in their lives. That's me. That's my
I do
grandiose take on
too.
it.
And
Yeah.
I could see that you're like very energetic and very, open and interested, and I feel like
I
the same
am.
about myself. And I need that. I have a very hard time with, being online all the time, or we have Zoom meetings once in a while, for
Yeah.
work, but like you, if I can be there in person, that's just better. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I love being online and I love the connection, but it is true. I am one of those people that every single report card that I got from school ever from when I was a little kid was like, she talks too much. And then all my kids got it. And every single time I would read it, I was like, this is not a surprise. Like, okay, moving on. All right. So, I want to back up and let you set the scene for as much or as little as you want to tell us about your family. So you've got parents, but tell us a little more. You live in Indiana, who you live with, kids, siblings, pets, all
Yeah,
kind of
so
things.
yeah, so I'm married, and my daughter is 22, and she's, out of the house. She's in medical school right now, so very proud of her. My parents, I'm a Ukrainian immigrant. My parents are from Ukraine, and they
Okay.
came here in the 60s and eventually moved into Indiana and ended up by chance. I bought a house next door to them maybe about almost 20 years ago,
Wow.
which yes. So, yeah, so that's the situation. And they, being immigrants, they struggled, I think, with assimilation all the time. They were in the New York City area. They had an ethnic community for many years. And I was hoping and praying, maybe assuming that they were going to stay there and end up with their friends. And there's like a Ukrainian nursing home, and they would have been surrounded. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. When they moved here, it was probably 97 that they moved here to this area. They never really reconnected with their community. There really wasn't a community.
Okay.
Both extremely busy people, very, very traditional. My mother worked, cooked, cleaned, and did everything. My father did too, and he expected her to take care of him and he just basically didn't have to do anything. And at the same time, the other thing with ethnic families, I don't know, with all but Ukrainians, the eldest daughter or son, which I'm the eldest of two, is going to be taking care of the parents until they die. And there is very little expectation that they would go into a nursing home or do anything like that because that's just not what we do. And, that's becoming a very difficult problem with the situation that I'm facing. There's a lot of other things that have come up during this time that I really didn't, not that I didn't know about, but didn't expect for them to be as bad as they were. Personality disorder that my father has that's kind of come out, and his lack of addressing problems that he should have with my mother, didn't tell us, wanted to hide things, and just, I think, created situations that could have not, didn't have to be created, wouldn't have been quite as bad as they were, for lack of a better term.
All right, so
So,
let's unpack some of these things. How so did your parents immigrate as adults?
yeah, so they were in their late 20s and came to New York City. Yep.
All right, and so you're considered first gen.
Yes, I'm first generation. Yeah.
So I live in Miami. We have a huge immigrant
Oh, yeah.
community. A huge, very so like these are the conversations we have just as a part of being in the community. In fact, in Miami, where most of the country, the first thing people will ask you is, what do you do in a conversation? In Miami, it's very common for people to ask you, where are you from? And this is a hilarious immigration story. When one of my kids was in first grade or kindergarten, it might have been kindergarten, they had an international day, and the instructions from the school were to bring in a dish from where you were from. And my family, as generations, immigrated a very long time ago. So you end up with, this patchwork quilt of how far back do you want to go, right?
Oh, yeah.
But the instructions were very Miami instructions. And I was like, what do you want me to bring? And it was just so funny. It was just so funny that I was the oddball out of these like 22 families. I was like, I'm going to send, I think I sent like a cherry pie or something like that. I was like, and everybody else was sending, Brazilian treats and Cuban treats and all of these things. So the differences between the challenges that immigrants face are like top of mind here. It's not usually Ukrainian, although we do have an enormous Russian and Ukrainian community down here. And so it's been a stressful 5 years for your family also, as somebody who has ties to Ukraine.
Oh, yeah.
So very, very good. So caregiving is an incredibly complex stressor on families. And I think that the cultural implications, right? I mean, it can be
Yes.
family, and it can also be, country of origin and tradition, that, who's going to step up and take this job, and who's responsible and who's not, and who gets to live their life. That can be really hard in families. Your daughter is an adult, and it looks like she launched. Some people get squished. We call that the sandwich, right?
Yeah.
My dad passed away. He passed away before he turned 70, and I was like feeling really sad about that. I mean, I am still sad about it, but now watching my friends who have aging parents who are going through the caregiving thing, I'm like, oh my gosh,
Yes.
it was really, really hard, but also maybe it was a gift.
Yes.
Not a gift anybody wants. Not trying to sell
No,
that
I'm
as a
so sorry
present.
about that. Yes, but in some extent, at least if he's at peace and it was a quick thing versus like a long drawn out situation where you're watching someone turn into, for lack of a better term, a vegetable.
And then are we talking, your parents are going through memory loss? Is this memory care type stuff?
So, well, it's complicated. My mother got dementia, I want to say about 3 years ago. My father's extreme passive aggressive behavior prevented us from getting a proper diagnosis, and this is my struggle.
It's so charming. I'm sorry to laugh, but it's like, it's just so many of us have these relationships with our parents where we're like, listen, you need to do this. And they're like, no.
So, she kind of also was serving herself, and it was kind of like a very kind of, I would say, an atypical presentation. So we went through a bunch of neurologists. They're just like, she could fake good for a while. Then what happened was, she just wasn't very active, very much active. She was just not doing much at home. They should have been in assisted li living. He's like, oh, I'll take her here, I'll take her there. He didn't take her anywhere. So she would basically sit at home and drink wine, basically. So several years went by. The last 2, 3 months, Literally, she was just sitting and drinking wine. I was coming in there saying, Dad, you really need to do something. This is not working. Oh, she's fine. She's fine. Finally, she had a stroke on just past Christmas on the 25th, just a couple weeks ago. And at that point, it was the left side. And with that and the dementia, she had to go into rehabilitation services. So that's what she's doing right now. You know, she's not going to get better. So
Yeah,
what
I'm
is going to
sorry.
happen now as it progresses is that she is going to have 3 more weeks probably of this facility care through Medicare. And then the decision is going to have to be made. What do we do next? My father absolutely does not want to put her into any kind of living home situation. He hangs the carrot over my brother and I of like, well, we're going to give you our inheritance. And I said, at this point, I really would rather have peace of mind. But you know, we're stuck trying to help him. And he still has power of attorney over himself. I have it over my mother. I have it for him, but since he's still technically with it,
Right.
I could force him to do something, but you know, there's that nuance there.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and that's where we are. So it's like the struggle of, you know, getting him to be realistic, figuring out, can I realistically have her in the home with some care? What's that going to cost money-wise? What's that going to cost me mentally? You know, how's that all going to work? So that's where we are right now. We have a couple of weeks to figure it out.
It is such a complicated decision, and it's not one that anybody wants to make. I read an article, actually, that's a lie. I read a synopsis of an article that I think is this week, maybe last week, that they really are calling this like an economic crisis in the next couple of decades because the cost of memory care and the cost of senior care is and the number of people who are expected to need it is growing so fast, people are really not prepared. And one of the challenges that people face is the scenario where you're talking about now, where one person is really at a different threshold of care than the other person in the
Correct.
relationship. And so that's a really, really tough spot for people to be in. And I guess there is that show that is very popular right now. Ma The Man on the Inside with Ted Danson is out. And that is about, it's a cute little story. I didn't watch all of it because because the topic is assisted living home and memory care.
Yes.
Like, and I was like, you know what? This is a very cute thing and he's a great actor, but it wasn't as enjoyable for me as it might be for people who are not at the phase of life where we
Right,
are waiting to become a
yes.
parent, right? But yeah, it's a really, really tough thing. And it's one of these crazy things about adulting that before you're in it seems like it should be so straightforward.
It
It's
should be,
like, right,
yeah.
hey, here's the situation. This is what you need. The dominoes should line up and we should be able to make this decision. But I have not talked to anyone who has gone through this where it has worked like that. I have, it's a very, very challenging situation. So this timeline started when your mom was, you were questioning your mom's change in abilities
Right.
3 years ago or 5 years ago?
Well, I would say probably 4 years ago. I mean, she was fairly functional in the sense that she was like still, you know, able to tell you the difference. Like she could tell you if she wanted something or didn't want something. Like she was able to tell you a preference, right? She could do that. She was still able to do her personal hygiene, you know, a little bit of light
Right.
cleaning, but her memory was like, you know, the short-term memory was going. So I would come back. I would be there on a Wednesday, come back on a Thursday. She didn't know that I was there the night before. And that was stable for a while. And then finally, I'd say, I really do believe the stroke that she got recently was brought on by the excessive drinking. And this is where I shouldn't say this, probably people are not going to like it. I do fault my father for this because this is an individual who is able to take himself to the urgent care at the drop of a hat. He's able to go to his own appointments. He is still driving. He's 90. He's still completely with it. And it is a long history in the relationship of neglect towards her that started when they got married. And being the immigrants that they are, being committed to each other, her feeling responsible for bringing her to the United States, she always said this, kept her in a semi, I would say, borderline abusive relationship. It wasn't physical, but it was mental. And I saw this. But you know, what do you, and I would tell her mom, you know, you could be okay. No, I owe him my whole life. I owe him the fact that he brought us here, that he got a better life, that he brought my parents here. And you know, I saw this, you know, and I have to struggle now and not be angry because, okay, he's 90. But I also think that you, as a responsible human being, have some responsibility towards your spouse to give them the best that you can. And if you can't, he has resources. He has enough money. He had myself and my brother around to call us and say, "Hey, I need help." He would never do it. And you know, and this is the part where that with the caregiving piece that I struggle with, and the fact that he can't even, does not even want to make it easier on myself and my brother by saying, "Hey, you know, I will consider doing X, Y, and Z now. I can afford it because it's going to make your life better." No. And you know, and I get the whole thing with the inheritance. Like at this point, it's like it's not that much, and I could really take it or leave it. I would rather have peace of mind. It sounds really bad, and I'm doing the best. I will probably concede, and we're going to have to bring her home in probably 3 weeks, and I'm going to have to set up this caregiving thing, and then I'm going to have to assess whether this is something that's going to really be feasible for the future. I don't know. You know.
So, and the financial aspect in the family relationship, it seems like a trivial thing, right? But you're talking about a cultural thing. It is sometimes very important for parents that they have this dream. There's dreams that people have. They have the dreams
Right,
of seeing their kids get married, sending their kids to
exactly.
college. And some people really have a dream of it's a measure of their worth. It's like they're scoring themselves.
Yes.
Do am I can I am I going to be able to pass on this house, this
Exactly.
thing? And so and then you guys are in this discussion as a family, two adults, and you have a difference of opinion. And one of the crazy things about families, right, is that there's no guarantee you're ever going to agree, and it's not actually possible to get another adult who's got, who can make their own decisions to do stuff just because you want them to,
Right, exactly.
which is like that you are in the rock and the hard place. This is Sophie's choice. It's like, I,
Yes.
you know, right? It's like, I really
Yes.
think you're making the wrong decision. Then the second wave of that, not to put words in your mouth, is that the decisions that he's making, that is causing more work and stress for you right now.
Absolutely. Yeah. And
So,
there's at some point there is this disregard on his part for this because that's how he was raised, and I know that,
and he
you know.
thinks he can make the decision for you, probably.
Oh, I mean, there's a whole nother, we could talk about hours about that whole thing, but you know, we're trying to just like stick, but you know, I mean, yeah. So, and I look at my parents, you know, the friends of my parents who are, let's say, more like seven, six generations here, the Midwestern, you know, who are from the English and Dutch descent, and they're benevolent enough to be like, oh, okay, we're gonna sell the house, we're gonna do whatever we need so that you can be, we don't have to burden you and you can live it, you know, your peaceful life. Because let's also think about the other part of this. You know, I'm almost 60 here, and I shouldn't say my age, but whatever.
You get to say your age. I like to, I'm totally a person who's like, you get to say, like I ask people, sometimes I'll ask people, I'm like, listen, I know you're never supposed to ask, but how old
Okay, so
are
I also am not getting any younger, and it is taking an enormous toll on my mental health right now and my physical health, possibly if I don't control my reactions, right, to this. Because you know, stress will kill you. I mean, you talk about, and you know this, people know this, it's all over the internet. You know that stress is actually more toxic than anything else. Drinking, smoking, you name it. It's the number one killer. So you know, this is not a joke. And you know, I think sometimes that parents, older parents are so desperate to be alive that they will suck the life out of their living kids because they're desperate and they just want something else, you know. And to some extent, I kind of feel like that. And I think we have to be, it's a cautionary tale for myself for the future to not do this to my child and to take care of myself and figure something out beforehand so I'm not in the situation. Obviously, it's not perfect. She might decide, oh, mom, you know, I want you to be with me, whatever. But at least there would be options that we don't have here. Not only that, we don't even know what they want when they die. He never told me, do you want to be cremated? Do you want to be buried? do you want me to kill you with a gun? I don't know. I'm just
Put
kidding.
you out. But there's a
No.
joke in my family. It's like, put me out in the trash. Put me out with the trash.
Right.
That is hard stuff. That is really hard stuff. So my parents are both I don't have that situation, but my in-laws are 86 and 90.
Okay,
And
very close.
so we've been having these conversations, and it's so funny because I'm the youngest adult of all the adults in the group, but I was the one, because my father passed away so early, I was the one pushing it and saying, hey, let's have these conversations, let's do these things. I know they're unpleasant, but let's get, saying to my husband, but I'm outside of the
Right,
conversation,
right.
right? Like, I'm not actually involved. And they wanted to do it, and it was working on, but they went through a period about a year ago where they looked at moving from where they are into one of those progressive setups where you are in an apartment and there's things,
Right.
and the buy-in was so expensive that it was really a shocker. And then, kind of like, this is how I learned some of how I learned about, the inheritance thing. The rules when you go into forever care really are that you sign everything over to the facility. And they have to be right, because if there's no one around, they
Right.
have to be able to make the decisions. But that's a major concession. That's a major agreement to do. And my father-in-law was like, no, not happening. So we do not have to face this right now, but it is a scary, it's not fun party time conversation to have these things. All right, so thinking back to when you realize, because it's hard in the beginning when there's dementia and forgetfulness, because it could just be, and I'm not an expert on this, right? So, but it can just be confusion, it can be hearing loss, it can be miscommunication, all of those things in the beginning. When you began to realize that something was going on, describe how you felt at the time, because it's been a couple of years, what you thought the decisions were, and when you kind of realized, you were like, I don't have the time to work full time and do this. What I need to do is make this concession.
So the first thing that happened was it was very, very difficult for me to, when people, if you've seen people who have a cognitive delay or had an accident and their facial features change, there's a significant change of how they present. So the first thing that I saw was my mother's face change. She was not the same person.
Really? Actually, I didn't know that.
Yes. So what
I
happens
didn't know
is,
that.
okay, so back in the day when I was younger, started doing my assessment and psychology, and I would do obviously do assessments for all kinds of disabilities, traumatic brain injury, all this stuff. There were several cases years ago where students had had sadly car accidents, went from normal functioning and had this particular head injury, which would create a complete change in their facial presentation. You could see that this was not an intelligent person anymore. They didn't have any trauma to face. It was just how the face looked. So this is exactly, if you look at my mother's pictures from before this happened to when she had the dementia, you can see a stark difference. And that was the first sign that, oh my gosh, I cannot believe this happened to this woman. It just was completely, I was, no, it hasn't had happened to anyone in her family. It didn't happen to my grandmother or my grandfather. It was shock. And I was crying, probably grieving for probably 3 months, I would say, every day, and just thinking I lost her. And then I had to acquiesce and, remember that she still is my mother and she still had, memory. She still remembered me. I could still talk to her. She wouldn't remember what we talked about. It was kind of funny conversations, but we could do it. I could still take her places. Also noticed that we would go places. She used to like to go shopping and didn't like it anymore. 5 minutes would go by. She wanted to go home. We'd go out to eat. Half an hour. When are we going home? When are we going home? She did have a Chihuahua for a while, which kind of kept her kind of stable. The Chihuahua died last year, and that was like a complete drastic even dip into more memory issues, less functioning. She was even doing a little bit of cooking, then she completely stopped doing that. So it was like progressive stages and triggering events along the way. We couldn't get her another dog she wanted me to, but she was not aware of like how to feed the dog, how to take care of the dog, couldn't take the dog out. To the bathroom, the dog started having accidents because she wasn't taking Chloe out, so yeah. But and then as far as diagnosis went, they
That sounds
struggled.
like that was really challenging. I just
Oh
want
yeah. I
to
mean,
say,
I it was. I mean, my husband is amazing and he is really He is just a rock, and he's just so great. And you know, I have great friends and great community. Like, you know, Beth is amazing. She's gone through it already, so I was able to reach out to people. But you know, you feel bad about yourself, the situation, like how did this happen? And you feel like you're stuck, like there's no way out. And I will say, I had to tell myself, they're not going to live forever. This is a temporary situation, but it's, and let's figure out how we can make it better. How can we normalize, right? So, you know, I had to visit them every other day, I was in there and try to make sure things are taken care of, just keeping it as normal as I can for myself and for them. But yeah, so it's just gotten worse and worse. The worst part now, which I think is the most challenging for people who are thinking about what are we going to do with the caregiving situation? Are we going to put them in a nursing home, assisted living? Because there's different tiers of service, right? She
Right.
is in rehab and skilled nursing. If you are going to pay for that outright, that's 10 grand a month.
Ten,
If
yeah,
she
no.
were, yes,
Yeah.
if she were able to lift herself up enough to get to a wheelchair or to a bathroom, for example, she could be in assisted living for $3,000 to $4,000. So this is the kicker. I doubt she's going to ever be able to get up on her own. And that's when we're aging. I'd say that is the thing that the insurance companies will look at, and friends will tell me this is the defining moment of difference. Can you actually get up? Even if you're going to lose your balance for a minute and you can hold on, but can you do it? If you cannot, game over. And that's where
Yeah.
we are right now. So the situation will be that she will have to be in an adult diaper for several hours a day. We'll have some care, but that's going to be an unfortunate situation. Or we start looking at them taking their assets away. So it's, yeah,
Right. That's really unpleasant.
choice.
That is really unpleasant. And so 2 years ago, you guys were going through this and what did you see? What were the options? Because at that point you were working full time, and your mom had not had the stroke yet. So what did you feel like? You described this very well, and it's an unpleasant feeling. You said, it can feel like you don't have any options. When you looked at your life at that point, how did you get to the point that the choice was that you would downsize your job?
Well, I couldn't get them into, they would not go into assisted living. And I
But
wonder,
you
well,
did try. You saw
I
that as an
tried,
option and you said, what I'd really like to do is keep my
yes.
life. And that didn't work. And
That didn't
then you
work.
were in a spot where you're like, all right, then the only thing I can do is.
Right. So then I thought, okay, so we started trying to access things like we got the Meals on Wheels started for them. And then we accepted that. Then we
Right.
tried to get a cleaning person there. Then we tried to get onto a situation where we would, you know, I would visit them every other day and make sure everything is taken care of, make sure that if they need to get somewhere, if my father can't do it, I can do it. So yes, that was it, because I realized that perhaps with part-time work, I could provide enough support in at this time where she was. And you know, and she remained stable for a long time. And then, of course, as I think I said, if she had not been drinking as excessively the last couple of months, again, maybe it wouldn't have made a difference. But I mean, who knows, right? I'm just,
Yeah, it is one of those questions.
I
It is one of those. It is one of those things that I call it the knowledge trap. It's like you can spend all your time thinking,
Right, exactly.
if this had been different, and at the because we've already moved through it, that's not always a super fun way to spend your time because it's already done.
And the other piece was this. I realized that they were so isolated, more than what I didn't know. And I was struck at how did this happen? You know, is it really the ethnic lack of ethnic connection? Is it the neighborhood? Is it that they didn't reach out? Or is it par for the course for aging or pre-existing mental health conditions that I didn't know about? And then my father plays these games with his hearing aids. He doesn't always wear them, right? So you're trying to have a conversation with someone who can't hear you. And then people started thinking that he had a listening comprehension disorder. Now they are foreigners.
Yes.
And then he started alienating himself from people. They were at Rotary because he wouldn't put them on and
Yeah.
because he didn't want to get a good pair. So then they were completely isolated. So I realized I'm going to
It
have to
is
find
really isolating, the
yes.
hearing loss. I'm
Yeah.
laughing because like 86
Yeah.
and 90 might this is a thing at our family events. Like the
Yes.
volume goes way up.
Yes.
I know when they're
Yes.
on the phone because people are, full volume to try and get it. And I say that with love and
Oh,
entertainment,
yeah, of course.
but it is, when you think about how much of our daily life is hearing, it can be really isolating to
Oh,
not
yes.
be able, going out with friends. And I think it's pretty common just because I have heard this over the years that people, well, I can't go to book club or like I can't eat out with my friends, and you put the blame on everything, right? But the true thing is that you're not hearing very well, and the hearing aid industry is not getting my vote for like honest, reliable people. If I tell you the truth, like
No, it's true.
I think that people go in and they're like, yeah, sure, we'll sell you another set of several thousand dollars worth of hearing aids,
Yes.
and then now they're all attached to apps on the phones and things, but nobody in this age group is ready to use.
Exactly. That's right. They don't even know how to do that. Half of them don't even have an iPhone. Come on.
Exactly. Yeah, I find it a very, very, if you, it's one of those things where if you don't laugh, you'll cry. But yeah, so the isolation, do you think that's connected to the decision to buffer with wine? Like your mom needed something to do?
I think so, and I think it's also the relationship was really difficult for her. They had a very, very high conflict relationship, and I think it never changed. And at some point, you say, "I'm not going to get divorced. Where am I going to go? So I'm just going to get happy with wine." I mean, think about
Yeah,
how
no, I
many
mean,
people medicate.
I see the choice there. I do. I'm going to give your mom the benefit of the doubt and say, this sucks, this sucks, this sucks. All right, Chablis it is. So this sounds like a terrible set of choices to be faced with, if I'm honest. I think that you really had a very tough multiple choice question in front of you.
Appreciate it. And a very, very stubborn individual, my father, who really had refused to even access the resources that I gave him. You know, like I said, he can go to the in the car, drive himself in the middle of the night with his, he'll tell me, "My finger's broken." I'm like, "I'm pretty sure it's not," and force the ER to give him an X-ray for a swollen finger. But we can't take mom to any kind of stimulating games. We can't places. They have like all these, retirement centers where you can do adult stuff, adult daycare. Nope, not doing that. So that's very, I think it was like, I am just going to have my daughter entertain me. That's all I want. And I'm going to make her do a kind of thing. And I was kind of stuck. And I'm like, well, I felt bad for my mom, honestly, because she was kind of out of it then. What am I going to do? I had to make sure at least she's being taken care of. So that's kind of like a lot of the reason that I did what I did. And it's, I know that, a lot of my friends from New York that have, it was a huge Ukrainian community growing up, were in that same situation. The only difference was that if they were in a community that had the Ukrainian, we call it nursing home, with their friends, they could go there. And it was a lot less expensive than the private ones we have here. And a lot of us would volunteer to help once in a while, so it would keep the cost down. So it was a beautiful thing. They left the community,
They
and
left the community. And one of the things I was thinking about several months ago is that this is actually a very modern situation. If you went back 150 years, this was not something that people were talking about. There were not as many facilities. People were not living as long. It was a completely different thing. So my grandmother did move into, she was widowed and she did move into a community. So I remember that. But I think that it was the more the exception until now it has become
absolutely.
something that, and there's a lot of things there, but it's not necessarily the thing that I was thinking about is like, this is actually not something that people could have trained us. This is not something that we've modeled from past generations. Because
You're right.
sometimes there's a social conversation that's like, oh, well, which I feel like you've been getting a little bit. It's like it's your job to take care of us. It's not the same equation as it was when your parents did it or their parents did it. It's not the same question. So, what changed for you in good and bad ways when you cut back the hours that you were working and made that concession? How did life change?
Well, I mean, I think it was also just kind of opening me up to other creative ways to, contribute to the world and maybe help me focus on what more I wanted to do before I die, because I've been doing the same job for 29 years, and it's a long time and really very, very involved. It was a very all-consuming job. I mean, it's not just 5 days a week, it was 7 days a week. It was unending. And I was kind of like, gosh, I have lost so much of my time. I want to do so many things. And now I had a little bit more time to do. I've had a little bit more time. So it's been a blessing, kind of. You know, it's a blessing
Okay.
in disguise. I'm always trying to look for that silver lining every single day. I'm a pretty positive person. So this is a negative thing, but you know, we're going to figure out where the silver lining is. You know, and the whole podcast thing would never have happened. We would never have had the time to do it had I been doing that. I had more time to reach out to some of my female friends and deepen those relationships because they became this enormous community support for me when we went out of town. I could call them. Even when this happened with my mom, the stroke, we were out of town and my good friend Karen came and she's like, oh my gosh, you know, what can I do to help? And got them to the hospital and did everything. And had she not done that, I would have had to leave my vacation, you know, and just come home. So there have been some many, many great things. And, you know, just a deeper understanding of like really, you know, the lack of really options for people. And just, I've never been down this path. So I've learned so much about, God, these private places are just making a killing, you know, and it's unbelievable the cost of skilled care. If you're going to be that sick, goodness, we've got to think about how not to get to that point. What can we do differently now to prevent that? Because I think a lot of these things are really preventable. They really are. I truly believe, you know, if you've read the book, How Not to Die, if you're familiar with this.
Who's the author of that one? Is
So I
that's not
can't.
Peter Attia?
No. So
Oh,
this is
okay.
another person. He's a physician, but he was a
Okay.
researcher, and he had a mother, a grandmother who 30 years ago was diagnosed with all kinds of conditions, was going to die. He changed her diet to more of a vegan vegetarian, and she basically all the cancer was reversed, and she lived for 30 more years after that.
Okay. All right. So that, no, I don't know if I've read that one. That does fly in the face of the perimenopausal menopausal advice, which is like, you know, eat nothing but protein. So I think that that is really interesting. You started down this thing about the support that you have, and it does sound like you have an amazing community. You've said that your husband was supportive and you have friends that are supportive. Looking back over the past couple of years, I like to ask people this for the people who are listening, right? This is not something that can help you, but for people who are listening who will someday maybe be in a similar situation, when you look back, because support is a problem here, like support is an issue. What is the support that you wish had been there and had showed up? Like, what were some things that would have been really great that as you went through this that you wish you would have had support-wise?
Before, you mean when it was going
At
on
any point,
or
yeah.
before? More siblings.
Okay,
You know, I that's the one thing I sometimes say to my think to myself, Mom and Dad, if you really wanted people in your family to take care of you, you should have had four kids instead of two, you know.
And that can happen. I don't know if your siblings live in the same town as you. It can happen if the family is spread out, right? If you get the default kid is the only one who's around, yeah.
What else? I think I wish we had more resources, honestly. Like I think I connected myself to resources because I worked at it. I'm in a lot of organizations and I have a lot of women friends of different ages. I didn't actually have them initially, but I developed it as I went on. So I'd say, wish I would have had that sooner. I was very, as I said, I had my head under the water. It was a single parent for a long time and then got remarried and I was just taking care of my child and working. And I wish I had just had that work-life balance like I have now, more of it now, so I could have developed those relationships and support sooner. Because then you know, would have helped each other more. You know, now the people that I have in my life have all gone through or going through similar things, so we can really help each other a lot. So yeah.
That is actually a really, really excellent thing for people to think about because when my dad passed away, somebody said to me, they said, you've just joined the club that everybody, most people join, nobody wants to join it, right? It's like, and it is this weird thing about part of the adulting journey that we don't, I mean, I guess when your kid parents get to be like 90, you are thinking about it, but there's a season where you're not thinking about it because it's not happening in front of you and you don't know. And so you're not talking to your friends about it and you don't know. And then you end up in this very narrow silo of information and something happens and you have no idea. You have no idea who to talk to or whatever. And I think there's a lot to be said for the fact that one of the tools is to have a varied and wide community
Absolutely.
because and so that is I think that's actually excellent advice. Now, you know, that's not the easiest thing to whip up
No.
with your magic wand.
No, but it's, you know, as like with anything else we practice, right? look at your day, see what your practice, this is what you're going to have in your life, right? Practicing those skills, going out, making the time. And it's not easy. Don't get me wrong. We know anything that we do is an effort. Making the time to go on this committee, inviting people over, reciprocating. We have a wine club that we have like once a month. Everybody hosts at a different place. We
I
play tennis.
love that.
You know, I'm in two like organizations. One is like a Extension Homemakers, where we help with 4-H. There's another one that I do, like I write a newsletter for these other women, the women's club. But you know, it's a lot. I mean, that I didn't do before, but I wish. These ladies are amazing ladies. They have been my family. They've been my support. They've been my role models. I mean, they're just, I'm so blessed to have them. But as I said, I was too over-focused on the job, on like the fear of like, I have to support my child kind of thing, or, you know, I'm just too overcommitted. And I think I'm not the only one. I think it's like something we fall into, these traps, like, oh my God, I have to make that deadline instead of like maybe spending time with, you know, somebody else. No. Make the time for your friends and your family because you never know.
You never know. I do. I will say, I think that it's easy to go that route. I think there's a lot of pressure on both sides, and also, you know, so I mean, I think that you were doing a good job of meeting the needs of your family at the time. So it's easier to see in hindsight that it was out of balance, and sometimes it feels like it is in the moment. All right, so I now I want to give you, we're going to wrap this up in a second, but I do want to give you a chance. You've mentioned it a couple times. I would love to give you a chance to tell the audience about your podcast and what you're doing and how they can find it.
So it's socialleopards.com is the, or it's just social leopards. And we have socialleopards.com website, but it's be at social leopards. And it's on Audible and it's on Spotify. And it's the first season is really talking about loneliness, social anxiety, how to make friendships, where to make friends, you know, the problems with it, taking steps to kind of like sort of test the waters, you know, strategies. You know, we talk about our own experiences, how we met and what we struggle with. And this season is about perspectives of
Okay.
various topics, you know. But yeah, that's pretty much what it is. But yeah.
So I'll put the links for that in the show notes and in the email that goes to all of the community. The easiest way to get the links for the people listening is to sign up on the email list for Imperfect Adulting, because then it shows up in your inbox. You just click on it. I want to just touch on it. It's come up in many of the interviews I've done. I read, I heard, so for me, motherhood was like new motherhood when the new baby, it was a very isolating experience. It surprised me. But I read something within the last year, so 2024, that millennial parents are the most isolated group of parents, that they're actually studying them. They are self-identifying as lonely and unsupported. And so that was a scary thing for me, because I'm not a millennial. I was before that. And I did find that, you know, to be a challenge, because I left my like community of being a worker, and then was like, oh, this 8-pound person is keeping me busy, but they're not great conversation. And I had to find a new group. I had to find a new group. So I think that the loneliness thing is really important for people, not just people who are caregiving, but people of all ages. And one of the benefits of the wide communities that we're talking about, is that it's helpful to have multiple generations, access to multiple generations, younger people to inspire, and energize communities, and people who have already been through some things to advise those of us, who are younger, so we're ready for what's coming. And so I think that's really important. All right, so now we're going to wrap up. I'm going to ask you three questions, not related to anything. It's not a quiz, it's just for fun. The idea is, you know, you just give a quick answer. All right, so what is the last thing you do every night or most nights right before you go to sleep?
Meditate.
Really? Oh, I'm so impressed by that.
So I have this happy place, which is the beach. I love the beach. I grew up in Staten Island, New York, near the beach. And so I'm just at the beach for about 5 minutes every night.
So that's your serenity spot, your
That is
channeling
my,
that.
yes.
That's very good. Mine is also a beach, but I love the beach so much that I moved so that I'm like near it all the
Nice.
time. So what is a skill or talent? This is like not a heavy duty question, so don't overthink it. But something, a skill, a talent that you wish you could do, but you can't. Something that you sometimes see people do maybe, and you think, oh my gosh, that is so cool. I wish I could do that, or I never, you know, whatever.
I just wish I was better at sports. I don't know. That sounds
Okay. Yeah,
bad. Like
no,
my
that's
friends are
fine.
just like, yeah, really good at all these sports, and I'm just not. I only have certain ones, but yes, yeah, not, yeah.
All right, that's a good answer. All right. So now this question actually only works if you don't drive an electric car.
Oh.
I realized that as I wrote it down. But are you a person who goes, because you can divide people who drive cars into two groups, right? Are you a type of person that goes all the way to the empty, empty, empty before you put gas in your car? Or are you a person who fills up the tank with plenty of time before you run out of fuel?
I'd say I'm in between. Depends
Okay.
on the day. I will tell you that twice in my life I have run out of gas because I was just too busy, but I'd say I'm somewhere in between.
So you have actually, I have never run out of gas. I'm
Twice
absolutely the
on
person
the
who's.
most coldest days and on the yes.
I'm going to totally reclassify you and tell you that that means you're officially the empty, empty person. Because when I get the like note, now you like before in the days, it was just like a needle, but now you get like a notice you've got 50 miles to go. Like when that comes up, the next time I go by a gas station, if I have 5 minutes, I'm like, yeah, here I am filling up. But there are other people in my family who are not that way. And every time, like it has not happened for a long time, so we don't drive as much as we used to. But every time they would be like, oh, well, I ran out of gas. I'm like, how? How? Wow. Like it tells you, it gets really angry. It's like, oh my gosh.
But to be fair, I live in a rural area.
See, I do not.
So
Like there's a gas
I
station
mean,
every like 12 feet where I live. My family has no excuse. You get a pass, like, because you could misjudge it. You could misjudge it. You could be like, I think I could make it. And really you can't. You get I that you're I'm team B. I'm team B on that. My family, throwing them under the bus. They do not get All right. That's Eat B. Roush. Thank you so much for being a great guest
Thank
today.
you, Amy. You're amazing. It was really nice talking to you, and I appreciated all the follow-up questions and how involved you were, and it was really terrific to meet you.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again. Please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.